having a fine day and it's nice outside. I like it when it's like this. You know, kind of the feel of the rain, the spring rain in the air, and it's nice and warm. It's 70, 71 degrees, something like that out there. It's I enjoy days like this. My wife hates the possibility of rain. But I do not. I enjoy the possibility of rain. I like to have rain in the forecast. One of my favorite things to do is to on about a 70, you know, a high 70s day, go out in a light shower and kind of wander about. It causes my hair to get all messy, which bothers me, so I wear a hat sometimes. But that's what happens. Hey, you know, when you're a kid and you start losing your hair. I started losing my hair, I guess, probably when I was, early 20s. And it looked like it was going to go like my father. My father had no hair on the top of his head. None. Not even little wispies. And kind of bothered me. So if you happen to notice my picture in yesterday's or the day before's ad for our show with Dr. Feynman, it was a picture of me when I used to race sailboats, and I had a real long hair and down almost to my shoulder, and but I had a stocking cap on. And I've had a lot of people say, "Why were you wearing a stocking cap in the middle of the summer while you were sailboat racing?" Well, I was wearing the stocking cap to cover up my thinning hair. No vanity in my family. Oh, well, hopefully we're going to have a guest call in this morning, and she works with Downtown Marion, and we're going to try and go over some of the things that Downtown Marion does. I hope she's able to get through, because we are struggling right now, as you know, not only with our signal, but we understand that we may lose our phone lines temporarily, and she may not be able to get in right now. So I'm hoping she can. But if not, we will vamp. That's what they call it in the acting business, vamp until, or in the music business, you vamp until you can get to the point where you know what you're doing. You know, that's vamping is you're making up stuff. Well, I did a lot of research for today's show, so I've got stuff in. I have stuff about being a good citizen. Yesterday's show, I don't know if you heard our on the air show, we had a guest in, and it's kind of challenged me to go think. And so I went and thought, and one of the things I wanted to learn is what other people thought of what is being a good American citizen. And one of the people that I hit on was Teddy Roosevelt. And there are a lot of people that didn't like Teddy Roosevelt. He was a kind of a rough rider is a good expression. He was kind of a rough rider. And he was one of those supposedly self-made men who was born with millions of dollars. Kind of a tough guy, or like to give that appearance. I didn't watch Hemingway last night. It was on TV, and I wish I had, because Hemingway was kind of a tough guy. I've never gotten along with tough guys real well. I don't dislike tough guys, but quite often I've found that most of the tough guys I knew were putting on a front. Now, I don't know about Teddy Roosevelt, and my guess is there was probably somewhat of a front there, but he walked the walk. He went out and camped and hunted and fished and did all the tough guy stuff, and I don't know about Hemingway. I know he was a big fisherman, and I think he was a hunter as well. Those are all the tough guy things that I've never really enjoyed. I used to fish a lot, and I think I've hunted once, maybe twice. Didn't like it. I'm not a real fan of killing other living things. That just doesn't thrill me. Now, if I had to kill something because I was hungry, that would be a different story. And I didn't mind eating the fish that I caught. I never got involved with the catch and release. That wasn't something my family did. If we caught fish, we had fish that night. Or we had it the next day. We had a really neat place up in northern Michigan. My father bought a summer home up in northern Michigan. Kind of an interesting story. We bought it from the guy who owned Frank's Spice Company. And also in the family was I can't remember the name of the socks company. Started with an A. But anyway, they were quite well-to-do. And the elder statesman of the family passed away and really left no will. And so, therefore, it had gone into probate or something like that. I don't understand all that legal stuff. But my father was able to buy this summer cottage on the lake with here, and it actually had a maid's quarters to it for $8,000. And we had that, my family still has it. My brother bought it from my sister and I after my mother passed away and left it to the three of us. My brother bought us out and has put a lot of money into it. It's worth well over $1 million now. But my sister and I couldn't even afford the taxes, let alone rebuilding it to make it as valuable as it is now. My brother was very lucky in his life. He invented something, a door closer, at the time, 98% of the NASCAR cars used the door closing thing. So he made a lot of money, and so he had plenty of money that he could fix that up. My sister-in-law and her two daughters now are the owners of that, and it's beautiful up there. But anyway, I digress. We had what they called a live well next to one of the places that we lived in up there. Now, we lived in two places, but the live well was kept. So the water was circulated by an artesian well below ground. Therefore, there was lots of oxygen in the water. You could take a fish from the boat, if it was still alive, and put it in the live well, and they would live for quite a while unless they froze to death because the water was really cold. But it was kind of neat, and that way we could have, if we had a really good night of catching lots of bass, we caught mainly bass and bluegill. Occasionally we'd catch a walleye, but not very often. If we put them in the live well, we could have them for the whole week, if we caught enough. Now I'm not a big fish lover, but my wife can cook a bluegill as well as anybody. She can make it fantastic. And I really like, well, I had fish last night, but it was, one of those frozen box fishes. I don't know where they find those boxes full of fish fillets in the ocean, but somehow or other they do that. Anyway, I got brave and I brought home some tilapia along with that type of fish. And so my wife looked at me like, how are we going to fix this? Well, we're going to find out. We're going to see if we can do it. I wish I liked fish. I just don't like fish. Sorry. I do love crustaceans, or mollusks. I like, which are crustaceans like lobsters, or mollusks like clams and that sort of thing. If they have a shell on it and they live in the ocean, I'm pretty good with it. Maybe the shell protects them from tasting like a fish. anyway, that's kind of my, I don't know where I was going with that. I guess we were just talking about eating fish, what I do with fish. If my wife cooks them, pan fries them, and it's probably the amount of butter she uses when she's pan frying them that makes it really good. It looks like Clarissa's not being able to get in, so I'm going to go ahead and start what I pulled aside to do just in case, because I knew that we've been struggling to be on the air here. But one of the things More than a century after Roosevelt did a speech that said every American has a responsibility to engage in a political process. But more than a century later, it seems, especially after our previous president, it seems to be really true now that we all need to be more active in our political process. I know it's hard work. I really didn't want to run for office when I ran for office, when I ran for state representative. I was asked by the Democratic Party to, down in Columbus, to run because they were trying to make sure they had somebody running for every single position in the state of Ohio. So I did it. It was hard work. Lots of hours walking up and down streets, knocking on doors, shaking people's hands. This was before COVID. And but Roosevelt thought it was very important that we all become involved in the political process. And you can become involved in the political process in lots of different ways. You can become involved in the political process just by voting, you know. And it's, I say just by voting, but actually that's probably the most political that you can do. Now, we are struggling right now with an awful lot of problems with our voting process. We have a group of people that seem to think that voting is not going to help them out. So they're trying to stifle voting in the United States. What I read the other day, 200 and some bills have been presented that are voter suppression bills of some sort, all the way from not allowing people to hand somebody water while they're waiting in line to throwing people off the rolls, the voting rolls, that haven't voted. They have to vote every year or they get thrown off the vote, the rolls. That's going on in some places. All sorts of regulations that are being put in to stifle people from voting. In a time when even the gentleman who was a Republican pollster and also in charge of voting came out and said it was absolutely free of voter fraud, or relatively free, implying, you know, that there might have been one or two cases of voting fraud, but nothing that would have changed any election or even tainted nothing. And that gentleman, I think he got fired because he told the truth. Nothing worse than being fired for telling the truth, right? But a lot of that going on. We were talking about Roosevelt and why he thought we should be involved in the political process. I finally found my way back to the beginning. I've got six quotes, I think it is, from Teddy Roosevelt, and we'll get to those after we take a short break here. All right? We'll be right back after about 2 minutes, okay? Come on back. I have lost you, I guess. All right, I'm going to push a button now, and it may make everything different, but we'll see. Hang on. Well, we're back, I guess. I don't know what I'm doing here. I must have pushed the wrong button. We are recording. I'm looking at it. And I pushed the right button I thought to start with. But we aren't going to our spots. So I will have... Scott, if you happen to be listening, give me a call or look at the computer and see what the heck I've done wrong. All right. So some of the things that... the quotes that Teddy Roosevelt said about being a good citizen. If you cannot be a good citizen, if you are not the first person, if you're not first a good, you can't be, no, let me start this over again. My mouth is all confused because of our new digs and my problem with getting my board to do what it's supposed to do. You cannot be a good citizen if you're not a good person first, is what he said. The first essential for a man being a good citizen is his possession of the home virtues, of which we think we all call a man by empathetic objectives or adjective of manly. In other words, you have to have what most people think a good man does. Now, that's a little odd because that can change from man to man, right? Here's a continuation of that quote. It says, "No man can be a good citizen who is not a good husband, a good father, who is not honest in his dealings with other men and women, faithful to his friends, and fearless in the presence of his foes." Now, that's the type of speech that sounds like Teddy Roosevelt, especially the last line, fearless in the presence of his foes. But it's kind of interesting. He believes that you can't be a good citizen if you're not a good husband. Well, being a good husband is one of those things. It doesn't mean everything's peaches and roses all the time with you and your wife, but it means that have enough sense to try and work through the problems. It means you have kindness and empathy for your partner, that type of thing. Being a good father is another thing that he says you have to have to be a good citizen. Well, that's along the same lines, but a good father is a little different than being a good husband, in that a good father has to pass on his wisdom in a way that it can be used. Just to tell your kids a lot of facts is not going to make you a good father. May make you a good educator, but it's not going to make you a good father. Passing on the facts like how you treat other people, how you treat your friends, can you share, do you know when to say no to your friends, that sort of thing. So, and then one of the things right in the middle of this sentence, it talks about being honest in your dealings. One of the things that we've really struggled with recently is being honest. I really struggle with it. I don't struggle with being honest. I struggle with people not being honest to me. In my day, I was a pretty good liar. I have been known to tell some fibs myself. Ask my mother. Well, you can't. She's passed. But I would tell little fibs to get out of trouble when I was young. As I got older, the fibs got less and less. I still told them, but by the time I reached, 50-ish, I had found out that if you start to fib to people, you have to remember the fibs, and that's just too hard of work, right? So anyway, Teddy Roosevelt says you have to be honest in your dealings. In other words, if you tell somebody you're going to give them a dollar for that widget, and you don't give him the dollar, or you give him 50 cents for it, you're not being honest in your dealings. And you may think you won. Okay, I saved myself a dollar. I saved myself 50 cents by, to use a colloquial word, by screwing my buddy. You may have won the 50 cents or kept the extra dollar, but be careful on your next dealings with that same person. You may not get what you thought you were going to get. It breaks down The trust between two peoples, if you start lying to one of the people. And that person will respond in kind, usually. There are very few people that will take being lied to and not respond in kind. You have to be honest, and I'm kind of interested that Teddy Roosevelt mentioned you have to be honest in your dealings with other men and women, which would imply you must be honest with your wife if you're a male. You must be honest with the women around you that are making decisions, like a mayor of a city, right now a vice president of a country, our country. And so you have to be honest. Now, excuse me, because now my phone is working, but it's not from anybody I know, so I just cut them off. I'm sorry. and then the end of that... you have to be faithful to your friends and faithful to your friends. Now, that's good. These are all things that Teddy Roosevelt thought were the basis of being a good citizen. Being fearful or faithful to your friends, as a police car just drove by the building, being faithful to your friends, that implies that you'll stand with them when they're struggling. You'll help them out. When they're struggling, you'll lend them a hand. It doesn't mean you have to give them money. It doesn't mean you have to go and help them move boxes when they move. But being faithful to them means that you know, if you're my age and you're not, well, let's say you're my age and you're not doing so well, maybe you can't do those things, but you can show your concern. A lot of people my age that are not feeling so good don't want to help you move your boxes when you're moving because they're uncomfortable. But they can lend you their support, verbal support, and that's being faithful to your friends. But it being fearless in the presence of your foes doesn't mean that because you've got a gun in your pocket you're fearless. Matter of fact, I think that's probably shows you're not fearless. You're probably cowardly. Being fearless in the presence of your foes is being strong of will. It's being able to say you're making a mistake, or it's being able to point out to a person that they're being cruel or not doing the right thing. And we all pretty much, I was going to list all the things that I think are generally accepted as the right thing to do. Unfortunately, a lot of our politicians right now don't have that list anywhere on them. That's kind of a problem for me. But the presence, fearless in the presence of your foes doesn't mean that you've got a gun, that you're not afraid of people that way. It means that you're not afraid of their what they will say about you. Nothing worse than, I don't know, if you've ever had kids that were teenagers, nothing worse. Well, I had a daughter, Amy. I have a daughter, Amy. And Amy was extremely fast, on her feet, very athletically talented, not a bad looking young girl, she was not liked by a lot of her friends. Well, they weren't friends if they didn't like her, but she was not liked by a lot of her associates in school because coaches loved her. Teachers loved her because she was smart. But the kids around her, some of the girls around her were just flat out jealous. But she wasn't afraid of that. She would do the right thing. And that's kind of what I think Teddy Roosevelt's talking here when he says, be fearless in the presence of your foes. I don't think it means I've got a bigger atom bomb than you do, so we'll blow you up. I don't think that's what he meant. Matter of fact, they didn't have atom bombs when Teddy Roosevelt was around. All right, here's another quote that he made about how to be a good American. The first duty of an American citizen is that he shall, he or she, shall work in politics. His second duty is to that he shall do the work in a practical manner. And his third is that it shall be done in accord with the highest principles of honor and justice. Now, you can mince words, you can flip them around to make anything seem of high principles. But we all know in our heart what a high principle is. You're doing things for the good of mankind, or womankind, or humankind. You're doing things to help the situation. Doesn't mean you have to give away all your money. Doesn't mean you have to be a poor person, you know. There are a lot of very filthy rich people that are doing things like that. I did notice this morning that the difference between billionaires and those of us who aren't billionaires has even grown wider and wider. And I think that's going to have to be adjusted somehow or other. But anyway, you have to do your business with the highest principles of honor and justice. And if you don't know what the highest principles of honor and justice are, and you know that I'm an atheist, I would suggest you go to your minister. And I don't mean just a fly-by-night minister. I mean a minister that studied religion, a minister that knows, that has the background, that he understands why the teachings in the Bible are the teachings in the Bible. Go to him and find out what the highest principles of honor and justice are. Now, be very careful, because there are a lot of Shylocks in that industry anymore. There are a lot of people that use, and I know a lot of you people will disagree with me, but there are a lot of ministers out there, or pastors, or whatever you call the person that's up in the pulpit on Sunday. There are a lot of them that are there for their own self-aggrandizing. They're there for the money. They're there for because they can't get a job anywhere else. They're there because it's easy work. It's not. But be careful. Know your minister. I have my favorite minister other than my father of all times is a gentleman that lives here in town, Reverend Kiger. He was a chaplain at the hospital for a long time. He was also the minister at the Epworth Methodist Church for a while. And go talk to him. He'll tell you what. I guarantee you he will give you good guidance on what is what the highest principles of honor and justice are. People like him. That's the type of person I'm talking about. And Teddy Roosevelt felt that if you couldn't if you couldn't do all these things with honor and justice, you weren't truly a good American. We will continue on here. I'm kind of struggling to figure out why we aren't getting our background stuff in from our computer. Apparently there was a problem with the computer, and I'm assuming that's what it is right now. I'm going to take a drink of my coffee. Hang on. Nice thing about having breaks in this morning show is that I can take a drink of coffee. But right now, because it's not working, I don't understand. Anyway, I hope at on the hour it will pop in back in and we'll be fine. All right, here's another quote from Teddy Roosevelt Roosevelt about how to be a good American. In a free republic, the ideal citizen must be one willing and able to take arms for the defense of the flag. That's a little bit different, I think, than what happened on January 6th here in the United States. Not January. Was it January 6th? Yeah, I guess it was January 6th here in the United States. Bearing arms for the flag is a little bit different. It means that you're willing to stand up for the principles that the United States was born under. And our principles are pretty clear, not crystal clear, but pretty clear in our Constitution. We all know that they said that all men are created equal while still owning slaves, which makes it a little muddy, but they also said, the Second Amendment said that we should have the right to bear arms and that there should to support a well-regulated militia. And we can adjust all these words around to make them fit. It's a lot like the Bible. You can adjust words around to make them fit what you want them to fit. But I think in your heart, I think most people know what they mean. Now, we will rationalize and justify what we're doing with lies to ourselves, which are the worst lies. When you lie to yourself, you can't lie to any worse than lying to yourself, because that will go on to affect people around you. But going to bearing arms in the defense of your flag, it doesn't mean, I don't believe it means, if your flag gets dirty, you shoot the person that knocked it to the ground. You know, that's the superficial side of that. What it means is that if the principles of the United States of America are being eroded or being attacked, you need to be strong against that. Doesn't mean you have to get out a gun and shoot anybody that disagrees with you. Now, I know there are people that believe that, but that's really not what Teddy Roosevelt had in mind, I don't believe. Now, Teddy Roosevelt was a little stronger about things like that than I am. I wouldn't say that Teddy Roosevelt was a, people like to call me a lib. They think that's a bad term. In my opinion, being called a lib is a good term. But anyway, I don't think he was what you would call a strong lib. But he did believe in principles, and he believed in honesty, and he believed that if you want to be a good American, you had to be good, honest, and clear with your meaning. If you disagree with somebody, that's fine. That's not going to hurt you or me. We had some disagreements yesterday, but it didn't hurt me, and I don't think it hurt the person I was talking with. It just made us think. And that's what we need to do here in the United States right now, is think. And unfortunately, we've gotten into a situation where you stay in your little, you stay in your clan, and you don't think because your clan is doing the thinking for you. That's pretty weak as far as I can see. And it's not very honest. It's comfortable, but it's not being a good American. You have to ask the questions. Why is it like this? Why won't you do that? I don't understand why we have so much racism, when in fact most scientific facts point to the fact that humankind came, all of us came from a similar area, and we expanded out, and that area happened to be in Africa. Now, even if it was in Europe or it was in Antarctica, we all, hundreds of thousands of years ago, we were all one family. We were all one clan. We were the human race, not the black race, not the yellow race, not the red race, not the white race, but the human race. And my microphone just made a little mistake there. Anyway, I think that's kind of what he's saying underlying a lot of this stuff. The defense of your flag doesn't mean going and shooting somebody because you disagree with them. It means that you defend what your flag stands for. And if you don't understand that, again, talk to a thoughtful minister. Talk to a philosophical teacher. Talk to somebody that has read good books. Talk to somebody who seems to be intelligent, and maybe they can give you some ideas along that line. All right, let us continue on with what Mr. Roosevelt said. It ought to be axiomatic in this country that every man must devote a reasonable share of his time to doing his duty in the political life of the community. Insofar as the community grows, I lost my place. Insofar as the community grows to think rightly, it will likewise grow to regard the young man of means who shirks his duty to the state in time of peace as being only one degree worse than the man that thus shirks it in a time of war. So in other words, whether it's good times or it's bad times, if you do not actively become a member of our political world here, that's you are shirking your duty to be an American. It doesn't mean you have to run for office. It doesn't mean you have to make speeches and take stands, big stands, and it doesn't mean you have to put up signs saying how good you are and stuff like that. That's not what he means here. But what it means is that you need to vote. You need to tell your friends why you feel the way you feel. Just telling somebody I hate that guy does not, or I hate that girl, does not really emphasize your political thoughts. It just says you have emotion about a person. It doesn't say you have any thoughts about the person. And I think we need to get more involved with critically analyzing our politicians. Right now, this Matt Gaetz thing, now I don't know whether he's guilty or if he's innocent, but he certainly has a lot of gunk around him. And where there is gunk, there is usually real dirt. We need to elect people that have this, as Teddy Roosevelt implies, they are good husbands, they are good fathers, they are honest in their dealings, and they were faithful to their friends. That's the type of person that we need as politicians. Not guys like one of the guys that's in our office. He just got reelected, and he is accused of stealing or misappropriating $60 million. I know you're innocent until proven guilty, but there is an awful lot of bad stuff pointing right at him. But anyway, And where there's smoke, there isn't always fire. So, you know, people can say bad things about you, and they may not be true. So you have to be careful about that, too. You have to be very critical. But the whole point here is you have to think and have a reason why you believe what you believe. And if you don't think through it, all that's going to happen is that we are going to have worse and worse and worse government. And don't we want good government? I know when I was running for office, a lot of people would say that come up to me and say, why did you decide to run for office? There are no good politicians. Well, that's not true. There are a lot of good politicians. You can tell a good politician by his adherence to voting for policies, his or her desire to improve the quality of life for all Americans, not just the rich ones, and not even just the poor ones, all Americans. And that's the type of person I'd like to vote for. Now, I know it's hard work. You have to do a lot of reading. You have to do a lot of thinking. You have to do a lot of listening. It's hard work, and a lot of people would rather sit and watch television reality shows that aren't real. And we just have found an easy way of couching our way through life, and that's not what Teddy Roosevelt is insisting makes a good American. And if you claim to be a good American, you had better know what you're talking about, or at least know what you think you're talking about, or don't claim that you're a good American. And there's nothing wrong with being a lazy American. There's a lot of lazy Americans around, but don't try to claim that you're something you're not, okay? If you do not take part in the political process, this is another thing that Teddy Roosevelt said, if you do not take part in the political process, then you don't deserve to benefit from it. The people who say they have no time to attend to politics are simply saying that they are unfit to live in the free community. Did you hear that? Really kind of what I just said. You have to make time. It's not easy to help, and you are helping govern the United States when you work in the political realm. Again, I'm not saying you have to run for office, but you have to say what you believe, but you have to know what you're saying is true. As he mentions earlier, it must be honest dealings. We have a lot of people that say a lot of stuff that they know darn well, or maybe they don't know darn well, but they should know darn well that they're not true. But they say it because it will benefit them and their friends. All right, the one last quote. Every citizen must be a political watchdog. It is the duty of all citizens, irrespective of party, to denounce and, so far as it may be, to punish crimes against the public on the part of politicians or officials. We haven't gotten there. Right now, we seem to be rewarding those that decide to be dishonest, rewarding those that are quiet. They're stopping movement. We are rewarding people that reward their friends, not reward the country. I believe
you're
I'm
listening
gone.
To WCBH
I'll be right back.
Radio LPFM Marion, Ohio. For Emmy Award-winning actress and voice of Ursula from The Little Mermaid, Pat Carroll, sharing her